You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's the journey. To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the journey!
I am your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is...
Charlene Schmidt.
Charlene, I just want to say, it is a fantastic day, and it is a fantastic day to podcast with you.
Every day that I get a chance to podcast with you is an awesome day.
I was sitting back, I was reflecting, and I was thinking about podcasting, I was thinking about Trek.fm, I was thinking about social media, and I was kind of lamenting because I was like, man, my social media experience isn't exactly where it was a couple years ago. You know, like, I don't think it's as fun as it used to be, but what still makes it fun, or at least a huge portion of that, is the Star Trek community and the Trek.fm community.
Well, I'd like to think that, yeah, the Trek FM community is as strong as it's ever been and just keeps growing and growing and growing. And even though a lot of people are on the Babel Conference on Facebook, there's still a very good Twitter presence, and that aspect of it is fun. And I'm thrilled that you recently created a new Twitter account that I'm just adoring.
I forgot. Yeah, I've already forgot about that.
What?
Well, no, I mean, like when I was talking about social media, it was funny because for those of you who don't know, and for those of you who do know, Char's Twitter account is Ola Profanity. Mine is at the Insane Robin. And just out of the blue, I started tweeting. I was just like, you know, someone really needs to make a Twitter account of the anti-Trek, like the 99.9% of missions that don't make the hour a week that we see. Because
yeah.
Think about it. If every single adventure, every single mission that the Enterprise had was like the episodes that we saw, they would get burned out fast.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
And so this was actually, and I tweeted about this, like, this was kind of an idea of my mom's where she said, she's like, you know what would be funny? If you did a series of stories that are like, or little quips where it was the Enterprise journeys to SETI Beta 5. And to check on the status of the colonists, and everything's okay.
Right. Yes.
That's totally the anti-Trek. Now, obviously, when you remove drama, you remove the interesting portion of Star Trek. So this, in no way, me pitching a show, I just thought, I was like, maybe it'd be funny if we could play on the tropes of Star Trek, you know, on the stereotypical stuff that, you know, like the techno babble or the holodeck glitches or the colonists that need rescuing, things like that. And yes. Just kind of turn it on its head. So you formulate the tweet by establishing the parameters of the plot and then going in a 180. So you're like, oh, Captain Picard goes on his Dixon Hill program to see what's what. And instead of going and everything goes wrong, it goes and he enjoys himself and learns something new about Guinan. You know, like, you know, like something like that.
Yes,
and so
yes.
I thought, I was like, instead of me just saying someone needs to do this, I was like, oh, I'll do it. And so it's called @RoutineTrek. And what I do is that I come up with my own plot points, but most of the time I tell people who follow me and also who follow @TheInsaneRobin to tweet me their suggestions, and then I'll tweet them with a via and their account name. And so most of it is built up with fan submissions, and I just thought it would be something funny. I might get like a few followers, like 12 or 15 or something like that. And in one day I got over 100.
Nice. As you should have, because this is a fantastic idea, and I feel like Twitter is the format for something like this.
Yeah.
You keep it concise. It's sort of like the TNG Season 8 or the Voyager Season
yes.
8 accounts, where
yes.
you don't need to say that much, and it's just a funny little tidbit, something to make you smile through your day as you're taking a break while at work or while you're on your commute, you know, if you're riding the bus or what have you. Something small, but still worthwhile, still worth the... the 5 seconds you give it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And yeah, this is a fantastic idea, and I'm so glad that you started it up.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, and I've been trying to accumulate as many as I can, and I don't requote every single suggestion. I get a lot per day, and so I try to do as many as I can, and I try to pick out the best ones. I mean, to be honest, not all of them are golden.
Right. Yes. Well, that's part of the curation, right? That's part of your responsibility as the account owner to find the cream of the crop and share those with the rest of us. It's not a free for all.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, it's not a free for all. And sometimes I just can't get to them because there's so many. But
true.
Yes, please, everyone who listens to this, please follow me at Routine Trek and also submit some of your ideas. I mean, like, read through the tweets. You'll get an idea of the style. And how you submit them is just mentioning Routine Trek. That's all you got to do.
A lot of fun. Join in the party, people. It's fun.
But today we are talking about a commentary, and commentaries are one of our favorite things to do, and that is Season 3, Episode 19, Rise. And we said last week the reason why we're doing it is because no one talks about Rise.
Yeah, honestly, I have not watched this episode in a long, long time. What I remember is that this is a Neelix episode. That's it. That's all I've got for you right now.
This is how Netflix describes it. Neelix and Tuvok get trapped on the surface of a planet being bombarded by asteroids. Tuvok's negative attitude begins to get on Neelix's nerves. Now, this kind of sounds like a Routine Trek.
Like, it really could be, because isn't this every day on Voyager?
Like, I love that last sentence. Tuvok's negative attitude begins to get on Neelix's nerves.
And you could say the reverse is true as well. Neelix annoys Tuvok. That's a Routine Trek.
Neelix's positive attitude begins to get on Tuvok's nerves.
Yes. All right. So it's probably a good thing that we are doing this commentary, just because there is such little talk about it. And since I don't remember hardly anything about it, it'll be almost brand new.
If I haven't seen it, it's new to me.
There you go. Yeah. Exciting.
Yes, this is this should be a good time. And what we do, for those of you who haven't heard one of our commentaries before, is we recommend that you queue up your DVD, your Netflix, your Hulu, whatever it is, and press play, but then pause real quick, you know, kind of bring it all the way to the beginning. And then we go 3, 2, 1, play, and then that way our voices are synced with your episode. And a lot of people, they don't even watch the episode while they listen to us, because they are hardcore nerds like us, and they can just remember the episode. And we try to make it entertaining for those of you who are just listening in your cars.
Yes, we try. We try very hard.
We try. So let's get going, since this is going to be the next 42 minutes and we've already gone 8.
Yes, let's do this.
Let's get going. Okay, so cue it up. Star Trek Voyager Season 3, Episode 19, Rise. 3, 2, 1, play.
Well, lo and behold, there is an asteroid. They weren't kidding with the synopsis.
They weren't, because normally we start with a, you know, like most Star Trek, we start with a ship, or we start with a station, you know, or they're above a planet or something like that. But it's nice to see a little something different.
Yeah, it's not every time that you see an asteroid, that's for sure. So immediately we just did a little sweep across the bridge, and there's two guys that we don't know who they are, and I have no idea who they are. I really don't remember this episode. You were talking about how we're super nerds and we could just quote this thing from memory. Not this one, not me. I'm afraid not. This must have not been a favorite when it was airing, because there are some episodes I know front to back, because I would videotape them all. But clearly this was not one that I was really into.
I always wonder about this one, because I know Voyager gets so much flack for the torpedoes that they use.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure somebody has counted them, but this is Season 3, and I know Federation is all about, you know, like, helping your fellow man and people in need and everything like that. But, like, when it comes down to it, and you're just like, oh, you know, like, should we really be using our torpedoes on these people? I mean, are they really that good of people?
Right. And Janeway is sometimes a little too quick to trust, so maybe she's actually helping some people out who are a little bit shady, and they've got some motives that aren't so great.
Yeah.
It's happened before. Also, why could they not phaser them?
That's one thing that I never really understood. I mean, maybe it's a too long of a sustained burst just won't do it.
Maybe. Or the phasers aren't powerful enough or something. But then, I mean, they're powerful enough for space battles, so... I don't know. That is definitely a place where they probably should have had the torpedo count in the writer's room, just to keep a little section of the board from being erased, and mark how many torpedoes they had, or said they had at the very beginning of the show, and then, like, a tally as they go through them.
And, why didn't they?
You know, when they were getting close, they should have said, okay, we need to find a way to build some more torpedoes because we're running out.
Why? I don't understand that. Well, okay, so, like, they purposefully put that line, and I can't remember what episode it was. Was it Caretaker? I'm not quite sure.
Where... It could have been. I'm not sure either.
But, like, it was really on, really early on in the show, they're like, oh, we need to use a photon torpedo. Yeah, yeah, photon torpedoes, we can't replace those, so we need to be careful. And we're like, oh, okay. So the writers, that was never mentioned before in any other Star Trek iteration. So that was mentioned specifically for the show. Why would they do that if they weren't going to follow through?
You would think, right? I know.
Because they should have done exactly what you said, is that have a little box with a tally, they mark a tally, and once they get close to that, they go... Oh, crap, this whole episode is like the deuterium episode, you know, where they need to find that material, and they do, and they're like, okay, we should be good for a little bit longer.
Yeah, if nothing else, it could make a really great B-plot in, I don't know, season 4, season 5, whenever they got close.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact number of torpedoes they used, but it was way over the amount they said they had.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
These costumes are so nondescript.
I was just thinking that. They are very boring. It could be any race, anywhere, anytime. There's just not a whole lot to them. Extremely generic.
They have no rank insignia, no markings of any kind. It kind of I was about to say D'Vor, but the D'Vors were a little bit more stylish than that. They looked
they
more
were.
Militaristic.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, there's just not a whole lot to these guys.
I always want to know, like, I'm always interested in what futuristic static is going to look like. Because in all of Star Trek, it just goes to static, what we know as static today.
Yes.
You know, like the white and black dots kind of just do. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this is the future. I mean, that we're not based on, this isn't based on over the air, you know, over-the-air technology, so, like, they should try to do something different than just going to static.
So what you're saying is that it's not going to be the black and white jujitsu fading in and out. It's going to be something different.
Yeah, it should be something different.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I never, ever thought about that. But you did. So props.
It's what I do.
Well, yeah, you're a video guy. You think about these things. Okay, this episode was directed by a guy named Robert Shear. That is not a name we see often, if at all, ever again.
Yeah, I don't know about that one.
Yeah, I have no idea who this guy is, and now I need to look him up. Because I don't think he did a whole lot of Trek in general, if he did anything besides this episode.
Now watching, he's going to be like one of the most prolific directors.
I doubt it.
I just looked him up, and he's done 11 TNG episodes, a Deep Space Nine episode, and 2 Voyagers.
Oh.
He did State of Flux as well.
Oh, did he? Really?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, there's me putting my foot in my mouth. Okay, I had no idea he did that much TNG or State of Flux. But he's not a Winrik Colby, that's for sure.
I know we don't need to just talk about the visuals or anything like that, but one thing I absolutely loved about Voyager was their away gear, their landing parter, their away mission gear. You know, like their backpacks were super cool and padded and sleek, and they're like sometimes they had certain uniforms, like when they went rock climbing, they had different kind of uniforms.
Those were cool uniforms.
Yeah.
What would you call those uniforms? Because they don't always wear them on away missions, so it's not like it's your away uniform.
Land Trek.
I really do like those uniforms. They didn't use them very much outside of season 3 of Voyager, and I wish they had. Because they look good.
Yeah, I think we saw them a couple of times. We saw them in Learning Curve. We saw them in
Blood Fever.
and I thought we saw them once again, but I can't remember. But not a lot comes close to the episodes we saw in Drive. I mean, the episodes we saw in Drive, the costumes we saw in Drive. They're
they're the NASCAR racing uniforms. Suits.
Yeah,
those were that pretty cool. Slick.
So we got the Star Trek camera shake and their inability to have circuit breakers.
Again, yes. That pyrotechnic budget, I tell ya.
Star Trek always does explosions very well. Practical explosions. I don't think they get enough credit for that.
You know, they probably don't. We take that for granted. I think they linger just a little too long on that shot of the bridge, on those extras, the no-names. Because it was a good 5 seconds of them pressing buttons.
I was just thinking that. I was like, boy, do these people look bored.
I was bored watching them.
Okay, all right. So the shuttlecraft just crashed, all right? And
surprise.
Tuvok, yeah, surprise. And Tuvok had his head on the Okudograms on the console. Okay, I once got into an accident going 15 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And my neck was messed up for a week. Okay, I got hit. And I was just going 15 miles an hour. They said that they were going like Mach 2.1.
Yeah.
All right? And they don't have seatbelts and they don't have airbags. How is Tuvok's brains not splattered all over the windshield?
Inertial dampeners would be my apologist guess.
Hmm. Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right.
I think that would be the only way the technology could control that. Now, if they go offline, though,
that's true.
Then you're in trouble and then you would be quite dead.
And they go offline all the time.
Right? And yet it doesn't really seem to affect much.
And also, Charlene, I'm going to raise the nerd glasses up here a little bit. It's inertial dampeners, not dampeners.
Oh, well, fine, fine. Yes, yes.
I hated like new Spock in James Abrams' verse. He said that in 09. He didn't say dampeners. He said dampeners. And people are like, what, is he going to get things wet? Like, what's going on?
All right. Well, my bad.
I forgive you.
I guess I've never paid that much attention to that term. I know what it does.
That's yeah, it. That's the important thing. That's all that matters. That's true. See, he's clearly pissed off.
Oh, yes. And Neelix is being a little bit of a Tuvok apologist right there. He really is a friendly fellow once you get to know him.
See, he really is. No matter how you feel about Neelix, he just wants to get along.
He does. He's actually a pretty easygoing, easy to get along with guy if you just give him a chance. It's just, well, this is Tuvok we're talking about.
Okay, so we're seeing the tether for the first time. And this is the basis of the episode where they have this kind of carriage technology where it's a tether from the ground all the way up to a space station, and that's how they get up and down. Now, obviously, I'm not a scientist, nor am I an engineer, but for some reason, I think that's a great idea.
Really? Okay, what do you like so much about it?
Well, I don't know. It just seems really economical. Like, if you can use friction instead of propulsion, or even magnetism to make yourself go up,
yeah.
And once you establish that, now they're saying that it's 300 kilometers long. Now, granted, you know, like if there's an earthquake or if the space station like goes crazy or crashes or explodes, what the hell is going to happen to the tether? You know, like it's going to fall. We're going to have 300 kilometers length of debris just falling down.
Right. And then it's destroyed and you've ruined everything.
Everything below, yeah. So, okay, maybe it's not such a good idea, and I'm sure we're going to get emails of people saying, actually, Tristan, this is why this is not such a good idea.
Yes, people who know more science than either of us.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, now, if it were stable, and we knew it would stick around for a great long while, yeah, that would be an interesting idea, but if this planet is anything like Earth, it's probably way too volatile to yeah. make it worth the effort and the money and all the time that would have to go into something like that.
They love the skin-tight outfits, even on Neelix.
Yeah, they do. they just can't escape the futuristic jumpsuit look. You know, yeah. Everybody wears a onesie at some point.
I wonder, I mean, like, if we get another Star Trek series anytime soon, I wonder if they'll try to avoid that trope of the everybody wears a onesie at some time or another.
That's a really good question. I don't know. I would love to think that maybe they would, maybe better fashion taste would prevail, but it's such a trope in Star Trek anymore that I don't know. Maybe they would stick to it just out of tradition, because that's the style. That's what's been established.
Yeah.
Now, this looks like a really common, like, planetarium kind of object, mm-hmm. with the lights on it and the weird sphere going around it. Yeah, I'm thinking they're in a planetarium.
I love that, that so in easy. I love that in TV and movies, like, whenever, like, it's always food. You know, like, it's whenever we want to establish that someone's been here or someone's been around, someone finds a plate and says, oh, somebody's been here recently. Like, you know, like, oh, well, that means maybe they're even still here right now. And I don't know what else they would do. I'm not saying it's a bad idea. I'm just saying that it happens a lot. Like in No Country for Old Men, they did it by a glass of milk. And, like, it was still sweating. Yeah. You know, like, it still had the condensation.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
I suppose it's just one of those things where we all need food to keep going, so it's the top choice. I mean, you don't know if somebody's been there to a place recently or not if you leave a deck of cards,
yeah,
or something
yeah.
like that.
Exactly. It's one of two things. It's they put food there to say, oh, someone was just here, or they put food there to say, oh, somebody left in a hurry.
Yeah, like a half-eaten sandwich or something.
Yes, it's always one of those two things.
You are right, though. That's a very common thing. Did you see the guy in the background behind Tuvok? He's no. leaning forward, listening incredibly intently at Neelix, basically trying to escape knife point. Just, he was way overacting.
I love it when side characters try to steal focus in the frame.
he was trying very hard. Does it ever annoy you that Neelix, after all this time, still calls Tuvok Mr. Vulcan?
No, we've talked about this a couple of times. I love it. I think it's great. Okay. I absolutely love that he calls him Mr. Vulcan, because it's something that was established in the first episode, the very first episode, and the very first time they met. And it just worked for me. I like it.
Okay. Some people say that it's kind of not the most polite term in a way to address him. Maybe that's why Tuvok is so annoyed by him, because I don't know. I don't know if I would feel insulted if somebody said Ms. Human.
No,
or something like that.
I'd
if an alien
it.
Called me that. But some people say that it's not necessarily racist, but just not. Once you learn that he is, like, his race is Vulcan, address him as Tuvok, because that is his name. Some people really get into a hunch over that, but maybe I've been reading too much Trek BBS.
Now, we have talked about this before, and I honestly believe, like, the people who say that it's racist are just looking for something to complain about, because it's not, like, calling him Mr. Vulcan is not the same as calling him Mr. Black or Mr. White or Mr. Brown or anything
or
like Mr. that.
Mr. Pointy Ears.
Yeah, Mr. Pointy. It's not the same whatsoever. It's his species. It was an understanding. It was a misunderstanding that was corrected, but then turned into a joke. Like, Neelix yeah. knows that it's a joke. He knows that his last name or his name is not Vulcan. It's just
right.
something adorable that happened when they first met. That's how nicknames start. You know,
yeah,
that's how that happens.
That's how I see it, too. I find it endearing myself, but I just kind of wondered if you, I don't know, if you'd heard that point of view or whatnot, or I don't know. I think you're right. People just want something to complain about. And Neelix is such an easy target, unfortunately, yeah. for Voyager. He tends to get a lot of that backlash, along with Harry.
Yeah.
Or Chakotay. There's a lot of Chakotay haters out there too, but a lot of times it's a very quick argument. Well, he was boring. And that's the end of it. Whereas Neelix, there's a little more to it. And I know that you're a fan of Neelix, and so, you know, had to throw that out there.
I'm a fan of everybody.
Even Kes.
Even Kes. That's exactly what I was thinking about.
Yeah.
That's right, Philip. Even Kes.
That's right. That's right.
Well, shout out to our friend and fellow co-host of Trek.fm, Philip Gilfis. He absolutely loves Kes, and whenever we talk about Kes, we get a tweet from him. We get a message.
Yes, we do. We'll probably get a tweet on this.
I mean, even when we talk about her in the positive, he's like, "You did not talk about her positive enough."
He might have a little bit of a crush.
So this is another mention of Neelix and his sisters.
Yes.
And we find out who his favorite sister was.
Elixia.
Elixia, that's right.
Yes. Now, did we ever find out how many sisters he had? I don't remember the exact number.
I can't remember either.
So I wonder if that was mentioned or if he's always just said sisters, plural.
Yeah.
These are the things that I think about when we watch an episode.
Well, he also said that he had some brothers, too.
Which makes me wonder, what is the average size of a Talaxian family? Because it seems to me like they breed a lot.
Well, I mean, we really have no basis for comparison because, you know, like if you look Neelix up, it just says more than one sister and more than one brother. So that's all that we know.
That's not helpful. Yeah, I kind of want to know, like, with Talaxian families, how often are, say, twins? Do they have litters even? You know, that sort of a thing.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Because they have so many children. I mean, that would be really cool and a little bit alien.
Yeah, I've always wanted, like, we kind of experimented with that a little bit in Deep Space Nine, where we never saw it, but they talked about how Ensign so-and-so was budding.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
I thought, and like, they also had the captain who had a transparent skull
Something
like that. You know, like, I love stuff like that. Like, it's, you know, it was beyond their capabilities to show it at the time with their budget. But I love the mention of it because these people were just talking about it like it was every day. And we would encounter this kind of different type of reproduction or this type, different type of skeletal structure or whatever like that. And it's just, it's very cool to see that in Star Trek, and I hope we get more of that in the
next
series.
Yeah. I mean, as we here in the 21st century are exploring things like exoplanets and things of that nature, where we're trying to find the likely possibility of other life out there in the universe, I have a feeling that life is all around us and in forms that we simply do not see as life, because it's not like us.
Right.
And so we're going to, I feel like if, when we do explore to a point where we can confirm or deny other forms of life out there, it's not going to be anything like us. And it's going to be in all sorts of forms, and it's going to be incredibly funky and fantastic.
It's interesting that you say it like that, because there is a theory that, there's a certain theory that there might be life out there, but people always say, like, well, what about intelligent life? It's funny because there, one person, it might have been Stephen Hawking, I'm not quite sure, and I'm sure somebody will be able to correct me via email or online, but somebody postulated that intelligence could be an aberration. What we define as intelligence could be only, could be proprietary to the human race. Or
that's
to
a really
Earth,
good point.
Because there could be a type of intelligence that we don't even understand or could comprehend or even witness. Or, you know, the idea of, you know, I think, therefore I am, is only applicable to us. You know, like, just because we evolved this way on this planet doesn't mean that it could happen someplace else. You know, like in Star Trek, where there's just kind of like, there's one track of evolution and that's where you go. And it's just, I'm not phrasing it very well, but try to look it up if you can, those of you who are listening. It's a really interesting theory. Like, I choose to believe that there is life out there, obviously, because I'm a Star Trek fan.
Yeah, there's gotta be. The universe is so incredibly, ginormously huge. We have not even seen anything yet. I
a
feel
large,
like,
not even a large percentage. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for as much as we know, there is so much more that I feel we don't know. The more we learn, the more questions that are raised, which just tells me there's so much more than what we could even perceive with our capabilities mm-hmm. that's out there. And so that is a really good point. I'm so glad that you mentioned that. And I'm going to have to look this up and read more about it because I'm really interested now. The fact that what we consider intelligence, just what we know of it, that mm-hmm. in itself is a limitation to what we would consider intelligent life.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
it's kind of a mind.
Yeah. That's a mind yeah. blower. Yeah. I love it. But it's true because we're arrogant humans and we think that we are the smartest creatures out there because this is what we know. And of course, we're going to think that we're the smartest things because it's us.
Right. Yeah.
I think we're absolutely freaking wrong. This is not the best that the universe has done.
I thoroughly believe that no one does the camera shake better than a Star Trek camera operator.
They've had a lot of practice. A lot of practice. And I think nobody else in Hollywood has done it nearly as much as people like Marvin Rush and the many other people operating cameras on Star Trek sets.
Yeah.
They know what to do and how to do it. And I remember reading something with the TNG cast when they were just getting started. They had to practice their moves mm-hmm. for the camera shake because it's just that common, that important. They would rehearse it to get it down right away.
Yeah, I remember there was an episode when TNG was ending. They had a marathon, a fan choice marathon. Mm-hmm. Of the top, I think, 5 episodes voted by the fans of TNG, and that all led up to All Good Things. And it was hosted by Jonathan Frakes.
Oh, it was a top 10. You've mentioned this before. I love this special so much.
Yeah, okay. I love this special, and you're right. I have mentioned it before, but like he was standing behind the security console, and he says, many people wonder how we get those action-packed shots on the bridge or in a shuttlecraft, and it's twofold. It's the camera shaking, and then the camera guy shook it, even though you know Jonathan Frakes is just standing still.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, and then also the actors kind of move with the motion. And he says, after 7 years, we've got it down to a science. And then he starts to do it, and then they cut to a montage of action, and it's just so great. I'm getting goosebumps talking about it.
So good stuff. And actually, I know somebody has an animated GIF of the crew shaking at a convention. So they were talking about this at some point, and somebody got video of it. And so, like, the TNG cast, they're all just doing their action shake. And it's so hilarious without the camera shaking along with it. It's really cool.
Yeah. Oh, I think I saw that, too. Like, this was a while ago, and it was on some talk show. Like, it was on The View or something.
I thought it was a convention, but I could be wrong. But they're all together.
Yeah, it could be another one. I mean, maybe they did it again, you know, but I'm pretty sure it was when they first started and it was on some talk show like The View. Obviously, it wasn't The View because it wasn't around yet, but...
Well, I don't know. Whoopi's on there.
That's true. Yeah, but...
It was a fairly recent thing, I think. Like, when they were doing the big TNG 25th anniversary reunions, I think it came from there because then it was, suddenly all over Tumblr.
Okay, yeah, it was the one that I'm talking about is like it is definitely older because
okay, so they have done this several times.
Yeah, they've done it a couple times.
Because Janeway looks completely bored. Sorry to cut you off, but she's just this is. Can I just sit in my ready room and read a good book? This is really stupid.
Yeah, there was a lot of times in this episode where people just look bored.
Yes, I think, they do.
I think everybody on the bridge was just like, oh, this is the B plot this week. Oh,
yeah,
really? Like all of this? Like I just have to say this and okay.
Yeah, and they've got to spend hours and hours doing the production on the bridge. You know, I would probably be bored too.
So we see Neelix getting out of his depth here.
Yes, the Netflix caption says, breathing heavily. He's got a little sheen of sweat.
It's every single time there's some sort of situation where, there's radiation, or, oh, the air is going away, or, oh, you know, like everybody's mind is being affected. Every single time, and every single Star Trek iteration, the one Vulcan is just like, oh, I'll be fine then.
Yes, yes. Well, they did mention way back in Amok Time, I think, that the Vulcan air is much thinner. you know, on Vulcan.
I had forgotten that. I didn't know that.
Yes, that was one of the reasons why Kirk really didn't stand a chance against fighting Spock, because he was going to be huffing and puffing during the fight, and it was going to be harder for him to hang in there.
I'm surprised they didn't bring that up again in Enterprise.
They didn't, did they?
During the Kishara storyline, you know, when Archer was going through the Vulcan desert and fighting all those other Vulcans and everything like that, which he would have had his ass whooped if that was the case.
Come on. Yeah, you're right. They didn't mention that, but it was very emphasized in Amok Time.
Yeah, so, I had forgotten that completely.
Oh, come on, Enterprise. Come and season on. 4 Enterprise was so good, too, but they missed out on that. I love this set. It looks like they just took a bunch of like troll panels and then some random objects on the set and threw them together and put a set.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why this episode is not a fan favorite. It feels very thrown together.
It kind of does. Like, it feels almost like the classic transporter console. There's like a little lever, you know, like sort of like how the TOS Enterprise, where if you beam somebody, you have to put the lever up or down. Mm-hmm. There's something like that around here, and there's like little weird steering wheel almost things on the walls that probably don't serve any apparent purpose.
Well, I mean, like, it, you're absolutely right on that, but not only that, but the story, the writing, it all just feels like, this episode feels a little bit like, oh, wait, we have to do a show next week? Crap!
Yeah, right? Yeah, now granted, this is a little later in season 3. Maybe they were starting to run dry on ideas. Like, okay, we got to do 26 of these things. What are we going to do now? And maybe that is why I remember so little about it. It's about as bland and boring as these aliens of the week and their costumes.
Yeah.
Not a whole lot to it. I'm not very invested in this story. I don't care very much. Do you?
Not really, and which is really funny because there's a story that I really like, and it's The Flight of the Phoenix, which is a movie, and they did an original and a remake. And they said that they took inspiration from The Flight of the Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And that movie is a great movie. And if you're going to take inspiration from it, maybe take some of the best parts, not just the overall parts.
They did it wrong. Yeah, honestly, what I can say is that my favorite part of this episode is Neelix's onesie. It looks good on him, and I do like it. It's not quite as flamboyant as his earlier outfits, but it does look good on him, but it's still very Neelix. But yeah, it is a onesie. It's skin tight, and it's a onesie for sure.
You're right. It's skin tight. It is a onesie, but it still has that color scheme that is very Neelix.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if he ever wears this again. I don't recall seeing it. Do you?
I don't know. I don't think so.
And if he does, it's not in a memorable moment. Now, Ethan Phillips really likes this episode, though. I guess probably because it's very centered around Neelix. He thinks it's essential to knowing Neelix.
Mm.
I don't know. I don't know about that. I feel like, you know, last week we did Essential Trek. I feel like you could skip this one and not get a whole bunch out of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you wouldn't miss anything if you missed it.
I just read something real quick. It's really funny that you actually brought that up. You know that globe, that glowing globe thing that you were kind of making fun of? That
oh, the planetarium thing. Yeah.
Like a planetarium. That's actually a redress from a console from the USS Enterprise's D's original stellar cartography.
No kidding. See, it is a planetarium thing.
It is a planetarium thing. Yeah.
I was right. Love it. I didn't know that was a redress. Wow. Now, this is probably the most interesting part of the episode, though, where Neelix is blowing up at Tuvok.
Yes. I this is the thing that I remember the most. Like when I think about Rise, all that I remember is this conversation when Neelix is screaming at Tuvok, and he just breaks down. He's just like, listen, I am tired of your Vulcan cynicism, of, like, your superiority complex, And it's like, just because you think that you're better than me doesn't make it true. I was so happy that he did that. And the other thing I remember is Tuvok having a fight up on the carriage outside in the weather.
Yeah, this is the one thing I think if you are going to watch Rise, you can honestly skip forward to this part right here and you're going to get everything you need. Just, I think this was a long time coming for Neelix. He's tried so hard to befriend Tuvok and all he has gotten for it is grief. And whether you like Neelix or not, it was great of him to finally just throw everything out there, be honest and tell him the truth and say, you know what? I am sick of your crap.
Yeah.
You know, you are superior in a lot of ways, but mister, you are not perfect and you are disrespecting me and I'm sick of it.
And also on top of that, you know, like Tuvok wants to keep going and Neelix says, no, we need to go to the roof to figure out what Dr. Vadum was trying to get. And Tuvok disagrees. And Neelix has enough and says, well, I mean, I'm the only one who can run this thing. And so we're not going anywhere until someone goes on that roof. A Starfleet officer never would have done that.
Nope. You would not disobey your superior officer like that. But yeah. Neelix can. He's the loose cannon with no rank.
Right. And I think that's really interesting.
That's the advantage of being the cook, I suppose.
What are they going to do? You know, demote you?
Yeah. What are they going to do? Fire me? To what?
I think, what did Janeway do to him? Like when he, with the whole, what was that? His friend's name? It wasn't Twix.
Twix. Wix?
Wix. Yeah, I do. I was like, that's
Twix.
Not right.
Twix would have been better.
I was going to say, yeah, Twix would have been tasty.
Yeah.
But no, like he had to scrub the plasma tanks for 2 weeks or something like that.
Something. Yeah. I think the worst thing that he could be demoted to is scrubbing the manifolds or the plasma manifolds.
Yeah, the plasma manifolds.
Yeah, personally, yeah. Forever and ever. That would be the one thing his punishment could possibly be.
I love this in Star Trek. Okay, like Tuvok just found the little device that's not supposed to be there, completely nondescript, had a little LCD, and then 6 buttons with no lettering, no numbering, no nothing, but he automatically knew how to use it.
Yes, apparently control panels are universal in the future because nobody has a problem learning how to operate any of them at any time.
It's so true. Like, there was one time I was watching Return of the Jedi with my cousin, and it's the speeder chase in the forest on Endor, and Luke hops on Leia's speeder, and he goes, jam their comlink, center switch. And my cousin's like, how the hell does he know that, okay? How often is he on an Imperial speeder bike, okay? It's really funny because it's something
that got me thinking. The one time I think where we did see people having trouble operating a control panel was in Star Trek 3 when they take the Klingon ship. Wait, is it this button? This one? And then Scotty says, no, that or nothing.
Yeah, that or nothing. So perfect.
The one time they actually probably got it right.
And then, Voyager did it a little bit, like when we went to the past, where it was in Future's End, and Janeway starts working a 1995 computer.
Right.
But then, like within 3 seconds, she already knows how to use it.
Then suddenly she's typing after she plucks a few keys, even though she didn't take that Turn of Millennium class at Starfleet Academy. Go figure. Yeah. Apparently, they're that much smarter in the future to where they just figure it out in no time flat.
So, okay, so he has one of the first contact phasers.
Mm-hmm.
So this is season 3, so I forgot how early in Voyager they snuck in the first contact material.
It was probably as soon as they wrapped up production on the movie, because this was probably being filmed just after that. So all those props probably went straight over to the set so they could be used.
So this was in February of 97 was Rise.
Okay, yeah, and First Contact came out at the end of 96, so that falls right in line.
Yeah, that works perfectly. I always forget. For some reason, like, to me, like, early Voyager is, like, early TNG. Like, in my mind, that's where it is. It's just before everything.
It's not 1987.
I know that. I know that. But for some reason, like, I always shift it, like, 10 or 5 years. Just because, to me, like, because of the age that I am, and it's 2015, I'm like, oh, Voyager was, you know, was a long time ago. And
it was 20 years.
I know, that's the thing. It doesn't feel like it was 20 years ago.
No, I don't know how that happened, and yet I'm really super stoked to celebrate 20 years at Star Trek Las Vegas this year. It's going to be a fantastic time. They've got the whole cast, minus Jennifer Lean. I don't know if they'll get her or not. She doesn't do many conventions at all.
Yeah.
But they got everybody else, and I'm so super stoked for that. I've been waiting for this. I intentionally held off last year going to Star Trek Las Vegas to save up money to make sure that I would absolutely be able to go this year, just for Voyager.
Well, I think that's pretty awesome, and I think you're going to have a great time.
It should be. By the way, I'm going to meet up with Lori, our former co-host, who was back with us in the very early days, so it should be
fantastic.
A great time. Yes.
Very fantastic.
And I'm sorry, I cut you off. What were you going to say?
Oh, it's all right. No, I was we just saw a shot of Tuvok. He's on the outside of the carriage.
Yes.
And he's climbing around, and he just kind of peeks his head through the window as he's struggling to go through.
It wasn't creepy at all.
There was a Neil Simon play that my wife did where there's a character who's outside of a hotel room. The play is called Hotel Suites. And the character is outside the hotel room, and he's crawling along the ledge. And he does it real slow, and he kind of peeks his head through the window. And every single time my wife choreographed that or blocked that, I thought about Tuvok peeking his head around.
I can see why it was the exact same thing.
And the kid who was doing the acting looked a lot like Tim Russ. And so it just...
Oh, really? Wow. How perfect is that then?
Yeah, it was just absolutely perfect.
Wow. That's pretty funny.
I feel like Neelix should have different colored blood.
Yes, I agree.
You know, like if Vulcans have green, humans have red, and
yeah,
well, Klingon,
I don't know.
Klingons are supposedly have pink if you watch the movies, but not the TV show.
Right.
What color? I would give him purple blood. That's what I would do. What color would you do?
I would actually just go for more of an orange.
Oh, so like his outfits.
Fit Talaxians a little bit. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, just make it a little less crimson and a little more orange.
Gotcha.
That's what I would do. I wouldn't be crazy about it. Like, I don't know, I feel like maybe Andorians should have purple blood. You know, or,
okay.
You know, they...
Well, they have
blue blood. Yes. I mean, that makes sense, too. But
yeah.
That would make, like, a purple scheme would make a little bit of difference. Or it makes sense, in my opinion, for them, if it weren't blue. But then I suppose if, I don't know, this, I don't know all the science behind this, so please, if you know more than I do, please write in and correct me. But because we are oxygen-breathing life forms, does our blood not have to be red?
It's,
Once it's exposed to oxygen, I guess.
Well, the reason why it's, well, no, it's because it's, we have iron-based blood.
Okay, so that is the difference. I thought it was all about oxygen. Okay.
The Vulcans, they have copper-based blood, and that's why it's green.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But one thing that's really interesting, and there's nothing you can do about this. I mean, this is just one of the... I'm nitpicking, and I don't expect them to do anything about it. It's just one of those things. So I'm not going crazy on him, but like in Star Trek 09, we had a shot behind young Spock, and there was the sun was behind his head. And so you got, you know how when the sun or a bright light is behind somebody's ear,
mm-hmm.
it looks kind of red and glowing and everything like that?
Yes.
The reason for that is because our cartilage is not as thick as bone, and so you can see the capillaries and see the blood.
Yes.
And so that's why it's red. So if the light was shining behind Spock's ears, it should be a green glow instead
yes.
of a red glow.
Good one. I'm going to have to look for that the next time I watch Star Trek 09.
Yeah, like whenever you see a Vulcan's ears and the light is behind it and it looks kind of red like a human's, that's incorrect because it should be kind of glowing green.
Yeah. Huh. Okay, so you know more about science than I do, as you've just proven. Now, it's been a long time since I've taken a science class, and I never did quite take chemistry, so I have a lot of learning to do. To make orangish blood, what sort of element would, you know, what would be conducive to that, to where we could say, oh, Talaxians have orange blood because they have this in their bodies?
Well, orange is really, really close to to iron. I mean, like to red. I mean, orange is really close to red. So yeah. I guess you could say they have an iron-based blood, but it's they don't have as much iron, maybe, or something like that.
Or, I don't know, could you maybe mix it with something else as well? Or,
yeah, I mean, that's...
Know, part iron, part something else.
That is very much beyond my capabilities and my cursory knowledge of science.
I feel like I've lost so many nerd points for not... I do not science. Have not scienced in a long time, not since college. Ugh,
I don't so science, but I'm a science enthusiast.
Yeah, I love to read about science. I love... what I read about making new discoveries and the things that people learn from doing science, and they know a lot more about it, but actually conducting the experiments and doing the science, not exactly where I lie. And yet I'm a very big science fiction fan. I don't know.
That is the line that just happened that is actually one of my favorite lines in there because it's so cheeky and it's so Star Trek. It's, you know, like the ambassador's like, "What happened to you down there? Where's Mr. Sklar?" And Neelix goes, "Mr. Sklar, return to the surface."
Yeah. Yes, you will him in a body bag.
Yeah, it's or like in a can of soup.
Yeah, yuck. Mm-mm, yeah, good.
I think it's that kind of line is like right up there with no triple at all. You know.
Yeah. Ha ha.
Ha ha.
So wink, funny. That reminds me of the Muppets show that's coming out this fall.
I am excited for that.
I'm stoked. I love the Muppets. We've actually been going through old DVDs from the original Muppet show. And man, TVD like that is not produced these days. And so I'm just excited to see this new incarnation because I love the Muppets.
Like when I first read that they were redoing a Muppet show, I was just like, okay, are we just going to do the same old thing that we've tried the past two times? And then they said mockumentary. Uh-huh. I was like, how is that going to work? How on earth is mockumentary style going to work? And then I saw the trailer and I was blown away.
Yep, same here. Yeah. All right. Yeah, we just had a little bit of a sort of pseudo love story thing happening here between these two.
I don't think so. I don't think it was a love story at all. I think it was just
an act of kindness, like okay, we go from holding a hand to kiss on the cheek and that's okay. Yeah, please just get out though. I really don't care about her. What did she even do?
I think it was really just two people who shared an experience together. I think that's what it was like. I don't think it was any kind of romantical feelings whatsoever.
Oh, okay.
I love this moment between them in the mess hall when he's like, "You were right this time, but one day your instincts are going to fail and then you will see I was right. That's Tuvok."
Yeah, poor Tuvok. Just can't grow that much from the experience.
Yeah. I always think about this because they're arguing over who gets the last word.
Yes, yes. That's how we're closing out.
And it's just like on Twitter. It's like when you can tell somebody that they, like, okay, you can have the last word. You can take the last word. And it's a gamble of that's basically just you trying to get the last word by saying like, okay, you could take the bait and have the last word because I gave it to you, or not have it by thinking that you're ruling against me, but really then I'm getting the last word. So
that's pretty much what Tuvok and Neelix did at the very end here.
That is what Tuvok and Neelix were doing at the end. So
all right. Well, that is the episode. My final thought on it is now that we've watched it again, it's fresh in my mind. Yep, didn't miss much.
Not once we get to season 3 for Essential Voyager watching, I do not think this will make the list.
Yeah, I have to agree. It's going to be a pretty easy no. Very forgettable. All right, well, Rise isn't the only thing that we've been talking about here on Trek FM this week, and so here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
These look at least like they're pretending that they're sealed.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they're just like beekeeper. They're still beekeeper helmets, but
The
mesh looks more solid.
They really do kind of look like electric razors.
Earl Grey.
We divide the ship into one of two ways. Port goes to port. I better not see any starboard guys on the starboard phaser target practice. You guys know which side of the ship you're on.
The orb.
And so they cannot impart to him the knowledge that he needs in order to raise his son. And Worf doesn't want to raise a human son. Like you said earlier, he didn't get the son that he wanted. he wants to raise a Klingon sign.
The Ready Room.
We knew that Spock was popular, and we knew that Dad had some fans, but we were not prepared for what we saw happening in the social media, in the print media. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the New York Times reported that they got more hits on Dad's obituary than any other personality in the history of the paper.
To the journey! I can just hear the Earl Grey people screaming, "Measure of a man! Measure of a man!"
And you know what I would say to that? Death wish! Death wish!
Warp 5.
I remember watching Broken Bow when Enterprise first debuted when I was in high school. I remember revisiting it now in full, and I had forgotten the fact that Future Guy had actually played an integral role from the get-go with Silic and the Suliban, which we'll talk about later in the show.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
It's all of these top-notch filmmakers, like people like Walter Murch, who literally wrote the book on editing. Like those guys all teaming up to make a big action kids movie, I think is really cool.
The 602 Club.
I think he's very much recreating that THX feel, and you may disagree with it. You may not think it's, you know, it's great, but it's on purpose. He wants that world to be that way.
Let me just say, conceptually, I agree with that. In terms of execution, that's where I think he failed.
Literary Treks.
It's amazing to me, as I reread these stories, how much of it I just kind of think of as Deep Space Nine these days, even though it wasn't part of Deep Space Nine, you know, the actual series.
Axanar, the official podcast.
It is the spirit of TOS that matters, that's being captured, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the aesthetic. The aesthetic was 1966 to 1969 that had its moment, it had its time, and there's a certain amount of charm still to that. But it doesn't allow you to push the narrative forward because that type of aesthetic holds creativity back, in my opinion.
Women at Warp.
She got that far without losing tons of crew members, which you know Kirk would have.
She's the Ernest Shackleton of Deep Space.
Of course she's an admiral.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We're available on just about every single platform that you could possibly think of. And by far and away, though, the most important one of these platforms is still, to this day, and always has been, iTunes. And we have a new review.
Woo!
Yeah! We have a good one, too. So, I would like to thank Tropical Man, it's TROPICLMAN, for giving us 5 stars and writing us an excellent review in the US iTunes store. He says he's hooked. Hooked, I tell you! And I'm so glad that you are. Thank you very much for writing your review. That helps us out in the iTunes rankings and helps other people find our show. And the more the merrier. We've got quite the party going on here. We love it. So if you haven't written us a review, please consider doing so. It helps us out greatly. If you already have written us a review, thank you very much. You've done your job and we really appreciate it. But beyond that type of support, we have a sponsor to thank. So let's hear about that.
Our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to, but never thought you had the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
Another way that you out there can help us out is by considering becoming a patron of the network through Patreon. Go to patreon.com/trekfm. Consider becoming a monthly subscriber and helping us out that way. That helps us pay for the costs of producing and distributing and storing all of these shows. It costs a lot to keep a new Trek coming to you every single day, so we appreciate all of the support that we get, but especially from our associate producers here on To the Journey. We would like to thank Kenneth Tripp, Jamie Deuce, and Aaron Harvey for being associate producers of To the Journey. You can follow Aaron on Twitter at GeekFilter. Well, our commentary is done for this week, so let's look forward to the next time. And what are we going to be doing, Tristan?
Next week, we're doing a series that we started a little bit ago, and that series was Top 5 Character Relationship Moments, and we kicked that series off with our beloved Janeway slash Chakotay, and now we're doing Tom slash B'Elanna.
And your favorite.
My favorite relationship on the ship, and so we're going to talk about our top 5 moments. Char, you're going to give your top 5, I'm going to give mine. And it's going to be fun, it's going to be great, but you'll have to tune in next week to find out. So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!